welcome to Chats with Chuck. Today, I'm starting what's going to be a new series of Chats with Chuck episodes / radio shows / podcasts. I am partnering with the Office of Institutional History, where I've been a student researcher since the beginning of last school year. And I'm going to be making a series of podcasts, at least over the rest of this year, podcast / radio shows, where I'll be discussing with OIH researchers what they do, what they've learned, why their work's important, what we can learn from it, and so on and so forth. You'll be able to find these episodes on the Chats with Chuck Spotify page. Some of them, including this one, in fact, you might be listening to it, quote unquote, live right now, will be broadcast live. Not live. Will be broadcast during my radio slot, and some or all will be available on different OIH pages. So today, to kick off and set up this series, I am here with Jessica Wager. Jessica is the Assistant Director of the Office of Institutional History. This is her 9th year working at WNL. She's a Lexington native, and she recently completed a master's in Indigenous education. Welcome, Jessica.
Thanks, Chuck.
So first, just in setting up what this series is going to be all about, what is the Office of Institutional History? What do you guys do?
So right now what I'm working on are specifically student research projects and conducting oral histories. That's both with alumni of our institution and faculty and staff. Most of those, though, are supervising students who are conducting oral histories through their research. And then the oral histories with alumni, we partner with alumni engagement and different alumni weekends, Young Alumni Weekend, Five Star Festival, and Alumni Weekend in May. We advertise for alumni to share their stories with us to be archived in special collections and archives. So those are my day-to-days, but student research takes up quite a bit of it. And we have a handful of students that are working with me currently. And then we're still continuing to address all of the research that has occurred before me.
So what is your main role? How long have you been doing it, since you just talked about research that happened before you? And what is your area of expertise or of personal or particular research within what goes on here?
So those are my two main roles, student research and oral histories, which, of course, kind of feed into one another. And my main research that's somewhat separate from institutional history is Native American history and presence. So I work with two student researchers currently. And we look through our archives to see how Native people are represented, whether we have students, you know, alumni from the past, and different initiatives that Native students would have worked on. We also are looking at how WNL interacted with Native peoples when the institution was founded. But that is just one small slice of multiple research projects. So really, my research in institutional history is all of WNL's institutional history.
So I think the really awesome thing about the Office of Institutional History is exactly that you get perspectives from like a really diverse group of students on a really diverse group of topics. So how many students currently work with the Office of Institutional History?
So let's see, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then there's one student who is completing a 1-credit seminar.
And everyone, I know you have two students working together. Outside of those two, is everyone working on a different theme?
For the most part. And we always are encouraging our students, if they have peers, you know, we have 3 seniors who are about to graduate. And so that we're hoping that they are establishing a foundation for which future students can build on. So we're always encouraging these students to keep in mind, you know, peers in their community or in their classes who might be interested in building off of this research. And there have been several student researchers preceding the few that I work with now, upwards of 30.
Are there any projects that have gone on for like more than 4 years, more than one person's undergraduate career?
Not currently, but there are projects that are at least 3 years running.
It's a great body of work there. So
what
does that final product, that final body of work look like for an OIH student? What can you expect to put out?
Well, there's a lot of variety there. So the first thing is usually students have arrived to us and they have a particular topic in mind or an interest, whether that's a topic, a theme, a person, or an event that they want to research, and we kind of help them be guided in that direction. We always start with looking through our institutional resources. So usually that means going down to the archives and looking through our university publications, so Ringtone Phi, alumni magazines, library catalogs, course catalogs, faculty minutes, reading through Crenshaw and Brownell, which are two works that speak specifically to WNL history. So we kind of start them with getting their feet wet with that kind of research. Then the deliverables that they can have, they range. We are always looking to fill digital research guides, so these history portals, as we like to call them. Part of those, that can be an annotated bibliography. So it can be a student who's just really interested in finding resources that relate to a particular topic and creating a bibliography and, you know, annotating that bibliography. Any articles, books, again, minutes, trustee minutes, those things that are written on the topic. There's also timelines, which really are pulled from the bibliography. So that's, again, a lot of archival research, looking at different events, you know, places and spaces on campus, different activities, different people that are involved in these, whatever the history is. So creating a timeline of that history and presence and the movements within, that's important. You know, we need that relevant chronological context. Additionally, oral history interviews, which also feed into a timeline. You know, I just came from the video editing suite down in the Hart Center, which is pretty fantastic. And these oral histories that a lot of students are doing as part of their research projects, you know, they're speaking to a lot of these events on a timeline. They're adding that extra context that you don't really get from the text.
It's very different than going and reading old university minutes or ringtone files or columns or what have you.
Totally. I mean, those things are very informative.
And you get a living story out of it.
Yes. Yeah. You know, they're kind of flat. It gives you everything you need to know. And then when you hear people speak to it, if it's possible, you know, we can't always do oral histories with some of these topics, especially ones that are quite old with people that aren't living and able to tell these stories. But it does build out and give you that context that you need. So oral histories are a huge part of this work, and we have quite a few students working on that. We typically look to have members of that community do the oral histories. You know, we want people who are knowledgeable about the topic in question. And when it comes to alumni weekends, the best part is that I usually try to find students, again, who are of that community, whether that's the 1974 lacrosse team that just came back for their Hall of Fame induction in October, which was pretty awesome.
They were inducted into the WNL Hall of Fame or like a national lacrosse
Hall of Fame? No, the WNL Athletics Hall of Fame. Yeah, really cool group of dudes. And we had two gentlemen come through for that conversation. So we worked with alumni engagement and a couple of the captains from the team, but we paired them with a student who was a lacrosse player. So that they might have that, you know, inside knowledge and how to follow up on a couple of lacrosse specific questions.
Yeah.
But, you know, it just builds for a richer conversation. Additionally, we have student researchers who work on papers, little outlines, mini documentaries. We had a student who did kind of a mini trailer on co-education. She compiled a lot of her archival research, some oral histories, put that together into a video clip. So there's a lot of flexibility there with some of those outcomes. We also have students who work on research that can go into, say, a history walking tour.
Right, which is some of what my research has gone into.
Right.
I know I mentioned briefly that I am an institutional history researcher. Since the beginning of last year, I've been working on a project called Building Namesakes, where I research the people who are buildings that WNL are named after. Some of them are very interesting people. Some of them had very interesting reasons for why they gave money to WNL or gave buildings to WNL. Some of them have really uninteresting reasons.
Right.
But it's been quite informative, and I think I've also through that learned a lot about I guess, other topics that people are approaching more directly with institutional history. So transitioning there, what are some of the topics that or the themes that institutional history researchers focus on? I know you already mentioned Native American history.
Right. So we've had so many that precede even me going back to, World War II Special Collection Services on campus, history of the math department, history of buildings on campus, like you said, town-gown relations, memory of Lee as president, philanthropy at WNL. We've had Student Association for Black Unity, early founders, alums, oral histories, those kinds of interviews. We have had a queer history project that's still ongoing, Jewish life at WNL, Latino and Latinas history. We had some interesting research on Vietnam protests here on campus. Then we have gone through, there's been a couple of different students who focused on, timeline of oldest colleges in the country, first decades of integration. I mean, it's a lot of work, and there's still so much.
There's an amazing range of work being done in the Office of Institutional History. And I'm very impressed by, you have all these people, you know, they kind of dive into special collections, which is a bit hard to parse at times, and kind of come out with all this very wide-ranging stuff and create pretty consumable deliverables often.
Yeah, that's what we're hoping for. We want this research to be used in the classroom. So one of the big things that we're working on now, an absolute collaboration with digital humanities scholars, with other librarians, with special collections and archives, are creating these portals of research. Mm-hmm. So having these digital research guides that live on a website that we're working on now that students, faculty can access, that kind of build on current projects that they're even looking at in their class, or, you know, totally new topics that might relate to a future class.
And how much, if any, I guess, of the office's work ends up in the museums on campus? Is there a relationship there?
Well, we're always hoping for it. I mean, there's a great curricular connections exhibit that's up right now that seeks to do some of that. We're working on a...
And where can one go see that if one's interested?
You can go to the Reeves Gallery or Reeves Museum. And it is the Gottwald Galleries.
Write that down.
Yeah.
So students, what is, and I guess I can speak to this in part myself, but what is the process like for a student? Like, if you're, take like a freshman who's starting with you, and the goal is like year and a half, 2 years down the line to publish a portal. What is the process of working with the Office of Institutional History like?
Well, we usually meet once a week. They've come to us, they've identified a project or an interest, like I said at the beginning, and we meet weekly to point out different directions they can take. Like I said, usually that starts in the archives. We'll kind of point them to a handful of resources that pertain to their topic so they can understand what they're looking at, what that landscape here at WNL will be, you know, how that will, how what we have will fit into their topic. And what we're looking to do with our digital research guide, so what the deliverables are for the students, are we're looking to take kind of raw data. So that's Ringtone Phi articles, Calix references, the yearbook references, alumni magazine articles that speak to that topic, and kind of put them just on this research guide. So they'll just be kind of raw information that people can interpret themselves, faculty can interpret however they want to. So these will be less interpretive and more just like, here's the information that relates to this topic, and just kind of getting a big base to build from. Then we go through and, you know, week after week, we've kind of fine-tuned what we're looking at. And then we start to envision maybe how that deliverable can grow. So, for instance, one student just started with looking at a timeline. So all the information we have that relates to a particular topic and when it started, how things shifted, students that were involved, topics that were discussed among these people, and then now it's turned into identifying students who are of this community and creating biographies. Mm-hmm. So just things that can be discovered about a particular person, and then they will be kind of an agent record in archive space. So when you're searching, whether that's in special collections and archives, or where you're searching digitally and you're looking for a particular person, there'll be a biography written about this person. So you can have a little bit of context about who it is you're looking at, mm-hmm. what they're involved with.
So it sounds to me like, I mean, not only is working for the office a way to learn about a particular topic that you're interested in, whether that's LGBTQ history on campus or Black history on campus or something completely unrelated, but it's also like a rigorous way of learning how to research.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
You're starting with you're establishing facts. I personally have spent a lot of time in special collections, like, at, you know, asking them for very particular items and searching through those drawers with, like, if you're my age and you're listening to this, like, we're so lucky to have real files now. Like, looking through those file cabinet drawers in special collections with the little cards that tell you where to find something else. Mm-hmm. Spent a lot of time doing that, and then you get all your materials and you're trying to just establish a big body of facts, and then you're really interpreting it, right?
Yeah, we have a really awesome special collections team. So this,
they can find anything.
They can find anything
in that crazy place. There's so much stuff.
Yes, and Lisa McCown, who's been working in that office for quite some time, I wish I knew how long she'd been there. I can't tell you how many times I go to her and say, Lisa, I'm not sure about this particular thing. And within, you know, a few hours, she's turned up some direction for me to look at. But that, yeah, our work really would not exist unless it was in, you know, it has to be in partnership and it has to be in collaboration with these different departments, you know, museums, special collections and archives, other faculty and staff, digital humanities, like it all works together.
Mm-hmm. So, oral histories, I guess they aren't a given. Like, how did you guys settle on oral histories? Like, why are they really a really great way for people to tell stories about WNL?
Well, the oral histories, the importance of them came in before my time. They were already being conducted to students. I'll take the current portal that we're working on, the Student Association for Black Unity, early founders and founding years. There were oral histories conducted with 11 of the brothers. And that's really a testament, one, to the students who did the research, you know, being in that community, wanting to have interest in hearing what the experience was. Two, it's someone who understands the importance of the living community telling their story, you know, adding that additional context mm-hmm. that you just can't get from text, and the voice, and just, you know, kind of being present with that person. And then it's really important to have the trust of the community you're interviewing. So mm-hmm. having the brothers and Cebu trust not only the students, but institutional history and Washington and Lee with their stories, that's really important. So
how do you build that trust?
How do you build that trust? One, you work with them. It's collaborative from the start.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't speak to how that project started because, again, that was before my time. I've only mm-hmm. been in institutional history. I'm starting my second year now. But I do know that the students, are of that community. So there's already a baseline of understanding.
Right.
So they can, you know, these two students were in Cebu. So they have that frame of reference. They're Black students. They understand, you know, there's cultural similarity there. So there's already that kind of baseline. And then they're just, you know, truthful about the project. And mm-hmm. you keep the community informed along the way. So with these oral histories, whether it's with Cebu brothers or with alumni that we're interviewing, it's meeting with them when they come onto campus and saying, you know, here's the consent form. Here's what you're agreeing to. Regardless of what you say today, I will send you the transcript afterwards. It might be a few months because it's just me and another person working on them. But you'll have a chance to reflect on your words before it goes live. And then we'll keep you posted on how it's being used. We won't be using it unless we have your consent and we have your agreement, or you've posed something that we want to, you know, work with and collaborate on to make a reality.
It's a really human way of telling historical stories.
I think so. I mean, it's, you know, again, when you're looking at, like, early histories, you can't always do
that. Right. You can't interview people who were here when the school owned slaves or when Robert E. Lee was president.
Or just when the university was founded. Like,
right.
We just don't have that, and that would be great. But so when we are able to talk with a living community, I mean, that's when the trust can get built. But
right.
Yeah, it's a very small, it's much simpler than people think. It's really just communicating and making sure that they're comfortable and that they feel they're part of the process and that there's mutual benefit. That's the important thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can see what you're saying, that beyond the fact that, you know, someone is more interested in researching the history of their own community, they can actually most likely connect better to members of their own community than someone from outside.
That's not always the case. You know, I mean, there's a lot of ways to conduct oral histories, and there's a lot of motive thought around that. So it can go either way. In a pinch, it's better to have someone catch the conversation than not.
Mm-hmm.
We just look to make sure that the student has an experience, you know, that they're learning something along the way. These conversations, particularly with the early founders of Cebu, I mean, they are so, it's such an incredible chance to get mentorship from elders.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as I'm listening to these, I feel like I'm getting an education. It's kind of incredible.
They give a lot of advice during these?
Life advice. I mean, it's not just history of W&L. Like, you know, of course, the conversation is going to start there, and then it's going to go along, you know, a different path. But, it's pretty exceptional. So it's just making sure that students can sit and have these conversations and have a little bit of transformation that hopefully contributes to, you know, their academic growth or their personal growth on campus outside of academics, whatever that is.
Mm-hmm.
It feeds a lot of things because it's very human.
Right. So many students who research with you study subjects like Jewish history, Black history, LGBTQ history, Native American history. We've kind of discussed all these things. And I guess to some people, those may not seem like, quote unquote, major parts of Washington and Lee history. But what is the importance of studying these things? Like, what is the big picture of studying, of what you study and what your office studies? And
well, the big picture is that everything relates to Washington and Lee's history. We're constantly finding new slivers to investigate, to explore, to work with living community. I mean, it's a big picture, and so we're looking at quite a few years. And beyond, you know, identity-based research topics, there's athletics, there's environments, grounds, and campus buildings, there's co-education, there's curriculum, employees. I mean, there's a lot of topics, you know, looking at Liberty Hall Academy, library and librarians, literary societies in the Greek system, military life and veterans, MOCCON, presidents. I'm just kind of going through some of the research we have. Scotch-Irish founders, you know, slavery. I mean, there's just every time you read a university publication from the past, you find like five more topics that you need to.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I can't tell you how many times I'm going through an RTP and I'm like, this is like the fifth one that's mentioned Goshen. I mean, there's so many common threads in different time periods. And so it's just our task to realize that while we have all of these different time periods, they're all related by something, and just trying to connect the dots as easily as possible.
Right. Have you found, or I guess have the researchers found, that alumni whose experiences you're studying are like tend to be really interested in helping out and want to share?
Yeah. Actually, every interview, every oral history we've conducted with an alumnus for a full year now has been overwhelmingly positive. They leave having been glad that they were listened to and that they were able to share their story. And they all have something to contribute is the best thing. I mean, we had this overwhelming theme of Vietnam stories and Vietnam sentiment on campus that emerged from our five-star generals. That's 55 years and over.
Mm-hmm.
And during alumni weekend with the 50th anniversary class. So every year we're targeting the 50th, which is the oldest group
right.
that comes to campus during alumni weekend, just because we want to hear those stories. But yeah,
and of course, 50 years ago was when the United States left Vietnam. I'm sure those people had a lot to say about it back then.
Well, they do. I mean, that's the thing. It, like, all these different time periods slip into the conversation and you discover these common themes. So the content analysis that we can do and that we have done and post from these, you know, oral histories, it's pretty rich. It charts out its own topics is the best thing. I mean, there's some common themes and there are directions that you weren't anticipating.
So where can an interested listener find oral histories? Is there a library or catalog out there yet? Are they still separated thematically?
So right now we are working with our librarians to make the oral histories accessible. They're working on a new platform, and there are still oral histories that can be listened to though. If you go to DSpace, I think it's dspace.wou.edu.
Awesome. I will, that link will be displayed in the Spotify description when this podcast goes up.
Yeah, they're kind of sprinkled throughout. There's a really big chunk of oral histories that were conducted by Mae Warren, M-A-M-E,
mm-hmm.
last name Warren. You can search that in DSpace, and I think it's 96 or 97 that those were conducted, and there's a ton. There's a whole book that goes with it. It's called Come Sheer. So you can get a lot of perspectives on Washington and Lee's history.
Mm-hmm. So I guess you just mentioned the Mae Warren project, but outside of that, I guess, and outside of the relatively recent work of your office, is that are those the first, I guess, internal looks at WNL's history? I know there are a couple books written about the school, survey type books written about the school. But is your office like really unique in its view towards WNL's history?
Well, I don't think we're unique in that we, as an office, are like the rest of the campus community looking to see how WNL started, how it's evolved. So we're all kind of, you know, and where we are now is contributes and is a product of that. But no, I don't think we're exceptionally unique. It's just exceptional that we have so much history and that we all want to kind of look at it and everyone's a part of it.
Is this something that a lot of other schools have? Like, do you work with or are you aware of institutional history offices doing similar things at other older institutions?
There are offices like this. There are a lot of university historians. That's not quite what we do or not what I do right now. That there are institutional history departments.
So, looking ahead, as I mentioned, this is going to be an ongoing project, kind of crossover between Chats with Chuck and the Office of Institutional History, where I'm going to be talking to other institutional history researchers about the work that I've done. Could you give me like a sneak preview at maybe a couple of the things that my viewers and myself can look forward to in these future episodes?
Well, hopefully we'll be able to hear from some of our senior students who can talk about Native history and presence. Hopefully we can hear about some Latino-Latinas history, some oral histories that have been conducted, and looking at LGBTQ+ history. And perhaps Cebu. We don't have any current students, but we would definitely be able to share a history portal and some information with you.
All right. Well, that's very exciting. Jessica, thank you for coming on the show.
You're welcome. Thank you
for talking about your office and its work. And I'm really excited for this project and to hear about the rest of the work that my fellow researchers have been doing. So thank you very much. That's Chats with Chuck today.